questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRabi English Radio, Call of Islam page. We're welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Ata, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have a very special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Nur Muhammadpour. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome, brother. Okay, Sheikh Nur Muhammadpour, according to Islamic laws and Islamic teachings, whose responsibility is the nurturing of the children? Is it upon the mothers or the fathers? Or is it upon the father or the mother? I mean, do we have any recommendation in the religion of Islam, for example, that the mother, we can say, is the only source of nurturing for the children inside the house, and the father must be only busy with the works outside the house, for example, earning the living, working outside, or something like that?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know, first of all, nurturing the child, educating the child is, you know, we should give it the priority in our family system. You know that unfortunately some people, they have forgotten about the, you know, upbringing of their children, you know, nurturing their children. And it is, I believe that it is very dangerous for some of the Muslim families, especially we are talking about the Muslim families. You know, we should not neglect our child. We should take care of them, especially for the nurturing of the child, you know.
Okay.
But after all, talking about the nature, whose responsibility is, actually, it is a responsibility of both wife and husband, both of them, you know. They have to pay attention to the nurturing of the child. And one of the most important is, why are your action?
Mm-hmm.
Because child, they look at your actions.
Okay.
And they look at you at their sample, role model. So you have to have the noblest and best, you know, behavior within your family framework in order to show your for your children one of the best role models, okay? Because as I mentioned, our children, they look at us as their role model. It is very important. That's you cannot expect your children to, for example, to be nicest one, to be, successful children. But you yourself, you do not practice. You are not practicing Muslim.
Yes.
It is false. For example, you, an individual, any Muslim, they do not pray in the home on time,
yes,
but they expect the children to pray on time.
Yes.
Is it possible? Mm-hmm. No, because children, they look at your action,
yes,
not your, you know, lip services.
Yes.
But as I mentioned, for example, it is one of the main responsibilities of the, you know, parents to take care of the nurturing of their children. In one of the Risalatul Huquq, the treatise of rights of Imam al-Sajjad, he said that وَأَمَّا حَقُّ وَالَدِكَ فَتَعْلَمْ أَنَّهُ مِنْكَ وَمُضَافٌ إِلَيْكَ. The rights of your children is to understand that it is he or she is part of you.
That's right.
And he or she is attributed to you.
That's right.
He said, في آجل الدنيا بخيره وشره. In this life, whether that children going to be a nicest one or the evil one, after all, he or she is attributed to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is he is part of you. He is or she is your children. Okay? And because of that, you have to have the, give the priority for the nurturing of your children. And he said that وَأَنَّكَ مَسْؤُولٌ أَمَّا وُلِّيْتَهُ مِنْ حُسْنِ الْأَدَبِ وَالدَّلَالَةَ عَلَىٰ رَبِّهِ. You are responsible for upbringing your children, to educate him or her, to teach him or her Islamic etiquette of life, and to guide him or her toward their Lord.
That's right.
To explain for them religious responsibilities, etiquettes, mannerism, You know, how to behave with other people, how to be sociable with other people. These are very important. Of course, I know that sometimes it is very difficult, for example, especially for the, you know, for some of the husbands when they go, fathers, when they go to the homes, they are maybe tired. They do not have much time. Yes. They cannot put more time for the children.
They do not have energy to play with the child.
Any energy.
Yes.
But child, they are very energetic.
Energetic, that's right.
But we should remember that this is our responsibilities. Mm-hmm. We should take care of our children. وَالْمَعُونَةَ عَلَىٰ طَاعَتِهِ You should help. You should facilitate for your children to obey the Lord and to get closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And after all, to be successful. And to play a role in the society.
That's all right.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Inshallah, you'll find your way. As you said, all in all, yes, especially in today's world, sometimes the parents both work outside. I mean, we have so many women who work outside, or for example, we can't say that's right, put the children on the schools or the kindergartens or primary schools or something like that. There is a nurse or a babysitter in the house, okay?
Yeah.
So the babysitter is not going to replace the place of child, the parents, you know, the father and the mother inside the house. And this, according to Islamic lifestyle, as you said, the responsibilities are clear. But at the same time, they have to be. There must be the concept of contribution. We have to be helpful to each other, isn't it?
Exactly. You know that I think it is a huge responsibility for the parents.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the, for example, financial problems. Maybe wife and husband, both of them, you know, they go out, they work. But after all, they should give priority for the upbringing of the children.
That's right.
I know that sometimes it is very difficult for maybe for some people to put time mm-hmm. to, for example, play, to educate with the children,
yes.
to, you know, have the warm welcoming for the children, you know.
Yes.
But we should remember that this is our responsibilities to have to give them some kind of growth. You know, rushd, we call it.
Yes.
To, you know, facilitate
yes.
the ground for the growth of children.
Yes.
In order to blossom their
mm-hmm.
potentiality. It
yes.
is very important. Especially in this time and era that we are living, they have to have the absolute, let's say, facilitation for them in
yes.
order to improve in their potentiality and to be a successful children in future. To show your
mm-hmm.
love and affection
yes.
to the children.
Yes.
In one narration, Noble Prophet Muhammad, he said that, أحب السبيان ورحموهم. To love your children,
mm-hmm.
to be welcoming to your children, and to be merciful toward them.
Yes.
Not to have harsh behavior to your children, you know, sometimes not to shout at them, not to disrespect the children. You see, these are some of the responsibility of the parent. But, you know, we should take care of this issue and to, you know, look at it as a Islamic responsibility.
Yes.
It is very important to put time for our family members and to be welcoming toward them.
That's right. But what are the exact responsibilities of a mother inside the house? What should she do?
You know, talking about the mothers, of course, they have the shared responsibility with the, you know, fathers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
Generally speaking, they have many commonality with the fathers. But sometimes the responsibility of mothers is to have the, to give them the sense of motherhood. You know, sometimes it is a duty of mother to put more time for the children.
Okay,
and to give them some, you know, ideas with regards to the, you know, some ideas, for example, especially for the daughters,
yes,
to show them the sense of motherhood, mm-hmm, in order to give them some, to explain to them how can you be a future successful mother for your own family.
Yes.
You know, it has some detail, many detail to explain to your child. So again, your behavior, the behavior of mother with the fathers, it is very important. If mothers, they have the nicest behavior toward their own husband, children imitate them, follow them up. Okay,
that's right.
So maybe, you know, in some cases it is a duty of mother to have the nicest behavior with the fathers,
yes,
and to, you know, facilitate the growth of the children.
Okay, that's all right. What about Quranic and narrative references in this regard, Sheikh?
For example, one of the famous verses in the Noble Quran, we have that the Qu anfusakum wa ahlikum nara. Protect yourself and your family members from the hellfire. Mm-hmm. If I want to protect and to maintain my family members from the hellfire, it is necessary to give them some Islamic information. For example, how to pray, to support them. It is very important to support them to, for example, have the Islamic duties fulfilled.
Okay.
About the prayer in the time of the holy month of Ramadan, to fast. It is very important. For example, in the time of Sahur, in the time of breaking the fast. These are, I think, very pleasurable environment in your family. You can have it. You can provide this kind of Islamic atmosphere and environment into your family members in order to, for your children to test the Islamic morality. Okay,
that's right.
After that, to facilitate for them for the education, it is, yes, very important. And after a while, to facilitate for them their marriage.
Yes.
Again, very important to on time, to have the marriage on time, mm-hmm, to have the successful marriage. I think all of these, they are considered to be from this verse of Noble Quran, to maintain your family from the hellfire and to safeguard them and to support them to be real servant of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and to have the successful family in future. You know, one of the ways for the upbringing of the children and, for example, education of the children is to love them, mm-hmm, and to give them the sense of affection.
Yes.
It is very important. To, if you want to get closer to your family members, your children, I think if you give them this kind of friendship, a sense of, you know, a sense of friendship and kindness toward your children, in that case, you can get closer to them. You should be, you know, actually somebody for your children to, your children rely on you and to tell your, you know, their problems and difficulties, to share the problems and difficulties with you.
Okay.
I think it's very important for the parents if they reach to the position that their children, they can trust them, they can share them the problems and difficulties. I think in that case, you can be a successful parent.
That's right.
For, you know, nurturing your children.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Noor Mahapur, for a nice elaboration regarding the role of the mother and the father in nurturing the children according to Islamic laws and Islamic teachings. It was very kind of you.
My pleasure.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن.
حسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نارا من لبن إن في الجنة نارا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن
يوسف جلالي بتهران
روبا شابت غازا
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Like other parts of the Muslim world, tempers are running high in Pakistan over the repeated Islamophobic incidents by some European countries in recent days. Outraged Pakistanis took to the streets of the capital Islamabad after Friday prayers to condemn the West for what they call its malicious anti-Islamic agenda.
Burning of Muslims' holy book by these Western nations proved that Islamophobic acts were not an expression of freedom of speech, but extremism. Sadly, extremism exists and is growing everywhere in Europe. It's time for European nations to think about who's promoting extremism by desecrating other religions.
Protesters chanted slogans and vented their anger against the silence of the West regarding repeated incidents of desecration of Holy Quran and the Prophet Muhammad. Demonstrators also called on Muslim nations to boycott European goods over what they describe as the West's insolent behavior.
We strongly condemn the blasphemous incident of desecration of the Holy Quran in Sweden. The incident is the worst and most heartbreaking act in Europe. There is no room for such a sad incident in a civilized society.
Demonstrators are demanding that the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, known as OIC, raise its voice against the growing intolerance against Islam and anti-Muslim acts across the globe.
It's time for the OIC to play its role in urging Muslim nations to stand united against Western conspiracies. Europe wants to ignite Muslims by doing such blasphemous acts. Once we are united, Europe will not dare to repeat such Islamophobic acts.
The countrywide rallies came days after Pakistan denounced what it described as the abhorrent act of desecration of the Quran in Sweden and the Netherlands, saying such acts disrespect Muslims across the globe.
Condemnations continue to pour in from Muslim countries across the world. Yemen, Qatar, along with other Islamic nations, joined Iran, Pakistan, and Turkey to denounce the desecration. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
People of Afghanistan are extremely upset about the deplorable and shocking act of some extremist individuals in Sweden and Holland in desecrating the Holy Quran, which is taken as a disrespect towards not just the Holy Book of Muslims, but all holy scriptures, by tearing the Holy Quran and setting it on fire. The primitive and uncivilized act of a bunch of radical elements in Europe has raised robust condemnation from Afghan people against such abominable act.
They claim human rights and still burn the Holy Quran. It looks like it's only for themselves. We want the Swedish government to punish the perpetrator of this action and also ask Islamic countries to be united against this action.
Even when such people insult the Holy Quran, the book's value increases for us. If we are not burning their holy books in response today, it is because of the teaching of the Holy Quran to have a peaceful relation with all people.
The Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan has also condemned the awful action and called for punishment of its perpetrators in Sweden and Holland.
We ask the government of Sweden to punish the perpetrators of this crime and do not let such individuals to act in provocative and heinous ways against the holy books.
The Holy Quran is simply a fundamental element to unite Muslims, so that Afghan politicians from various groups and ethnicities, including former administrators and current statesmen at the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, break ranks with the disgusting radical act towards the holy book committed by some extremist groups in Europe, and roundly condemned the disgusting act under the guise of freedom of speech. The Afghan politicians unanimously announced that the spirit and essence of coexistence of ideas and thoughts is definitely on the line, then on. During the protest, people of Afghanistan have called for the unity among believers of all Ibrahimic religions towards such targeted attacks, which have mainly aimed at weakening believing souls and freedom seekers of the entire world, and not just Islam and Muslims. Abdullah Mirzadeh, Kabul.
Thousands of people have taken part in the funeral procession of Palestinians killed in the Israeli forces raid on the West Bank city of Jenin Thursday. Carrying the martyrs' bodies, the mourners chanted slogans condemning the Israeli crimes. It was early Thursday when Palestinian media reported the regime forces raid on the Jenin refugee camp. The savage attack left the residents and popular resistance groups based in the camp with no choice but to defend themselves and confront the regime forces.
What happened today in Jenin Governorate is a massacre in the very sense of the word. We received 8 martyrs and 1 martyr in Ibn Sina Hospital. In addition to 18 wounded, 3 of them are in a very serious condition. Most of the injuries were due to direct targeting with the aim of killing.
Later in the day, the Israeli troops fatally shot another Palestinian in the town of Al-Ram near the occupied city of Al-Quds. The Palestinian was killed during a protest against the Israeli forces raid on Jenin. With a total death toll of 10, January 26th turned into one of the deadliest days in the occupied West Bank since Israel's military raids intensified at the start of last year. Iran's foreign ministry reacted to the bloody incident. It called on Muslim countries to unite and coordinate their actions in support of the oppressed Palestinian nation and the resistance to stop the apartheid regime's acts of terror. Palestinian resistance groups have also condemned the Israeli atrocity in the strongest words, calling for continued resistance against the regime.
The massacre that the Israeli occupation army committed in Jenin confirms the racist, fascist and criminal nature of the right-wing occupation government. This aggression, in addition to the continued violations at the Al-Aqsa Mosque and of the rights of the Palestinians in Israel, shows that this government insists on escalating the situation.
Our resistance will carry on and shall not back off from confronting this Zionist occupier, and the killing will not intimidate us and will not be intimidated by these threats made by the criminal leaders of this Zionist entity.
Palestinian resistance movements say the latest Israeli raid on Jenin comes within the context of recent escalations, especially in light of the new far-right cabinet headed by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his extremist allies. Hamas and Islamic Jihad have both expressed readiness to fight back in case these raids continue. Analysts believe that Palestinians need to bolster resistance against Israel to neutralize the regime's vicious plots.
The resistance should continue and should be escalated against the Israeli, and they should know that they should pay the price for all crimes they are committing.
Actually, they mean to eliminate the resistance in the West Bank, in the occupied West Bank, to pave the way to construct more Israeli settlements in the West Bank, in which we all know that these settlements are internationally illegal.
Jenin is among those areas in the northern West Bank where Israel intensified its raids over the past year in an attempt to crack down on the Palestinian resistance. In addition to Palestinian resistance fighters, civilians confronting the Israeli army during such raids, and even bystanders, have been killed mercilessly. More than 170 Palestinians, including at least 30 children, were killed across the occupied West Bank last year. Moreover, at least 29 Palestinians, including 5 children, have been killed in January 2023 alone.
I'm heading with humanitarian aid workers to drop off desperately needed supplies to civilians on the outskirts of Donetsk. Recently, fighting has become fierce as Russia seeks to advance across much of Donbass. A Russian tank fires at Ukrainian positions. As we drive, the boom of incoming not far off, we see the smoke rising from amongst the trees. A few moments later, a Russian artillery unit emerges from the site of the strike. They were hit. We arrive at the arranged gathering site to drop off the supplies. These people live only hundreds of meters from the front and spend most of their time cowering in their apartments.
Now, while I have reported on dozens of the Ukrainian terror strikes in the center of Donetsk, where there are no discernible military targets, bus stations, schools, markets, here we're so close to the front line that the civilians who live here run the extreme risk of getting hit by indirect Ukrainian fire. You can hear the constant incoming and outgoing around these areas. The people here tell me that just yesterday a music school was hit, killing a local man.
Tatiana Montion is a renowned Ukrainian lawyer, today helping to deliver aid.
Where they have to live. You can imagine how many people here. It's about 100,000 people all around the front line. How is it possible to move these people somewhere in safe place? It's impossible, absolutely impossible. So we do what we do. They have no shops, they have no transport, they have no possibility to feed themselves, so we help them.
Tatiana fled Kiev to Donbass 2 years ago, fearing arrest for her outspoken criticism of the Ukrainian government.
Everybody here understands that it's United States made all this trash to weaken European economy, to crash European economy, to force European industry to move to United States. Everybody here understands it. But why not European people? Ordinary people, of course, because I am sure that European top elite understands it best of all. But they're too corrupt to tell about it to their peoples.
On our way to the next drop-off, we're stopped by Russian soldiers. They tell us not to carry on the same road. We get out of the car to assess our options. There is heavy fire nearby. That's the reality across much of Donbass. Back in the car, massive incoming close by, and we're left no choice but to drive fast. In this desolate post-apocalyptic wasteland, it's artillery doing most of the killing. At the next drop-off, this woman tells me her mother is dying on the other side of the front, so she can't be with her in her final days. She breaks down in tears, saying she wants both sides to negotiate a peace. With peace negotiations further away than ever, both Russia and NATO seem determined to end this war with brute force. For the civilians trapped along either side of the battle lines, survival is a daily chore. Many won't see the end of the war. Many won't see the end of this week. Johnny Miller, Donetsk.
Celebrating January 26th, best known as Australia Day, has become increasingly controversial in recent years, with people holding rallies on this day to highlight the historical plight of Aboriginals. Many Indigenous Australians who traced their lineage on the continent back 50,000 years regard it as Invasion Day. Tens of thousands of protesters lined up in Sydney, while thousands more gathered in Melbourne, Canberra, and other cities, saying the day marks the beginning of colonial oppression and genocide.
Nobody's got the right to celebrate genocide. That's it. This is ground zero, genocide. Ground zero happened here on 26th of January, 1788. Nobody should be celebrating. It's not an event to celebrate.
The government has designated January 26th as National Day, which marks the anniversary of the 1788 arrival of the first fleet of British ships in Port Jackson. But protesters believe the government is still trying to gloss over the scale of British colonizers' crimes against Native Australians.
I think most white Australians would not celebrate this day at all if they knew exactly that level of depression and deep sadness.
There are several accounts of how colonizers wiped out indigenous communities in Australia through brutal and heart-wrenching repression. Emily Caroline Cray, a young settler traveling through northwest Queensland in 1883, recounts some of the British colonizers' horrendous crimes in her personal diary.
The station owner has 40 pairs of blacks' ears nailed around the walls collected during raiding parties after the loss of many cattle speared by the blacks.
Aboriginal people remain the most disadvantaged Australians, with higher rates of poverty, health issues and imprisonment than any other community. Now more than 2.5 centuries later, they're still struggling to find their feet in a white-dominated society. Australia's Prime Minister is planning to hold a referendum in March on recognizing around 4% Indigenous people in the Constitution. But repeated calls to abolish the controversial National Day have fell on deaf ear, as the government remains adamant to celebrate what many call the anniversary of Australia's colonization.
Due to a surge in respiratory infections, hospital emergency departments in many EU countries are currently being overwhelmed. Hundreds of drugs to treat winter-related illnesses are unavailable in most of the bloc's 27 nations. The crisis has been raised in the European Parliament.
We debate again about shortage of different medicines, most notably antibiotics. This debate is the proof that the European Commission is not the solution, but the cause of many problems all across Europe.
EU inflation is very high because of energy sanctions against Russia. The production of drugs in the bloc has slumped because of rising manufacturing costs associated with inflation. China is a major supplier, but relations between Brussels and Beijing have deteriorated.
We are witnessing public health systems across the EU become overwhelmed and exhausted as a result of the recent surge of COVID-19, flu, and RSV patients.
Critics say as a result of following US foreign policy, EU leaders have created a new health crisis by jeopardizing global supply chains. A growing number of EU health workers are forced to stay at home after becoming ill themselves.
The workers in the field are not getting to work. They are perhaps at work and not being productive sufficiently or not contributing well. And that affects the economy at the same time.
Experts say standards in health services across the EU vary greatly. Statistics show a person in intensive care with COVID-19 in Luxembourg has a 65% chance of survival. In fellow EU nation Romania, it's just 25%. There are warnings the current health emergency could get even worse.
The COVID virus is still circulating within Europe, and I wanted to share with you that we're closely monitoring the situation in China. And of course in the United States, where a new Omicron subvariant has appeared.
It was left to Russia to fly in emergency medical equipment to Italy when COVID-19 first struck Europe. It's the type of cooperation we are unlikely to see again anytime soon. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
For more than 120 years, the steelworks have dotted the Scunthorpe skyline. Its glory days when tens of thousands of people worked here are long gone. And these are anxious times for the 4,000 or so staff on shift and tens of thousands in the supply chain. British Steel is the UK's second largest steel manufacturer after India-owned Tata Group, ranking 25th worldwide and 8th in Europe. However, it's been troubled for decades. In 2019, the uncertainty over Brexit pushed it to bankruptcy. Since then, it's had three owners, most recently China's Jingye Group, which is asking the British government for hundreds of millions of dollars to go green and to keep its doors open.
A long tale to it, this story of the decline of the British steel industry. And you can take it all the way back to after the Second World War, where there was a lack of real investment going in, and the result being not being very competitive, and other emerging nations, our very successful nations, like, for example, Korea and obviously China, now producing steel at a cheaper price, more efficiently, and the UK was left behind.
Soaring energy prices fueled by the UK-backed war in Ukraine, carbon taxes and lost markets are only some of the reasons that have added to the already tough trading conditions. The $370 million rescue package from the government is to help British Steel replace its energy-intensive coal-burning blast furnaces with electric alternatives. Only a short while after Number 10 gave the green light for a new coal mine near Scotland.
Sadly, we're going to be seeing over the next few years more contradictory issues when it comes to what's green, what's environmentally acceptable and what is not. And then put that against actually the practical issues about the difficulties in obtaining power, the cost of power, and a lot of that you can say put down to the war in Ukraine. But it's a global issue, this one, which is going to mean that politicians will be, I'm afraid, well, whether it's actually greenwash or pure green, is going to be interesting to see actually what comes out.
It also comes a few days after British Volt, a car battery gigafactory, touted as a Brexit success story, declared bankruptcy.
British Steel underpins essential sectors in the UK economy, from aerospace to transport to construction. And the unions, such as GMB, are saying that the government handout will do little for the long-term future of an industry that's lurching from one crisis to another. Saipur is up, Scunthorpe.
Ukrainian officials took part in a meeting of EU foreign affairs ministers on Monday via video link. An additional €500 million military aid package for Kiev was confirmed, but the EU is at pains to point out that's just a drop in the ocean compared to what the bloc has already provided since last March.
Keep in mind the figure of 49 billions is the total amount of support to Ukraine, military, financial, economic and humanitarian.
Just a few days ago in the European Parliament, the strategy was condemned.
It's militarism that's driving a dramatic rise in geopolitical tensions, drastically undermining our security. And you'd think that the Ukraine war would have shocked us out of this approach, but no.
Workers have taken to the streets of Brussels to demand peace negotiations.
We need to stop this war because it's affecting our workers, and our workers have already been affected with prices because of the COVID situation.
EU foreign ministers adopted a fresh round of sanctions against Iran on Monday over alleged human rights abuses. The grounds for such sanctions are vehemently rejected by Tehran. Critics say the West's policy towards Russia and Iran is being driven by Washington. Moscow and Tehran control the largest energy reserves in the world. Analysts say the EU's access to these markets is being hampered due to influence from the United States, and ultimately it is ordinary citizens who are paying the price. Also on Monday, Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Shtaya updated EU foreign ministers on the appalling situation in the occupied territories. There was absolutely no discussion on the EU side regarding possible sanctions against Israel. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
The divisions that are dragging the U.S. down in all aspects are already something that the whole world can see. It is the key cause of political paralysis, economic chaos, a lack of confidence in the established system, and the exacerbation of many existing social problems in the U.S. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times had an eye on this issue, writing, "The Economist magazine recently published an article entitled America's Culture Wars Extend into Medicine. By culture wars, the magazine points its arrows at U.S. political infighting. The article acknowledges that when struggling with imperfect decision-making between scientists and politicians amid the COVID-19 pandemic worldwide, most countries got through without seriously harming science's reputation, yet the U.S. did not." The Economist magazine said, "No institution had a steeper fall in public confidence in 2021 than the medical establishment, according to Gallup. In 2022, this downward trend continued." It later explains that political stances boil down to social identity and virtue signaling, pledging allegiance to the correct answers on the masking mandates and care has become a badge of identity for firebrands in both parties. The divisions that are dragging the U.S. down in all aspects are already something that the whole world would see. It is the key cause of political paralysis, economic chaos, a lack of confidence in the established system, and the exacerbation of many existing social problems in the U.S. Now it has spread to the medical community, explaining precisely why the U.S., which holds the cutting edge of medical development and resources, has instead become the biggest epicenter of the pandemic. This is the Economist's concern about the status and strength of the U.S.-led Western world, as well as a reminder to the rest of the world that the U.S. inability to fight against the epidemic is a lesson and warning against politicizing and weaponizing the epidemic, rather than treating it scientifically and factually. The result is not difficult to imagine. After all, viruses will not talk about politics with you. In the face of a new virus, the available resources do not match the challenges faced, and this is the case all over the world. Under such circumstances, that one group of politicians say this while another group say the opposite doesn't help address the challenges. However, this kind of political game is exactly what American politicians have repeatedly done in the past 3 years, turning the virus into a weapon of partisanship. But what are America's culture wars? To put it bluntly, it is the elevation part of the scientific debate to a partisan one. For example, the vaccine issue, whether it has side effects or not, is a scientific issue, not a political one. The U.S. should encourage the public to get vaccinated and gradually improve the vaccine and reduce its side effects as much as possible. But what have U.S. politicians done in this regard? They're willing to attend seminars about the side effects of vaccines, deliver their manner of respecting science, and then oppose vaccinations. They essentially aim to enhance their political standing and strengthen their electoral advantage, not to fight against the COVID-19. On the other hand, other countries' achievements over the past 3 years are evident, and the U.S. is not qualified to point an
accusing finger to other countries. Some believe that, for example, if China took Washington's reckless approach, an estimated 4.8 million people would die. China's policies dealing with COVID-19 have actually saved millions of lives. Global Times added, in contrast, China's science-based epidemic fight approach is fundamentally different from the Western politicized approach of lying flat. China's prevention and control measures have been the result of respect for science and professionalism instead of being manipulated by politicians for their personal ends, no matter at which stage. This is one of the key factors that have enabled the country to win the battle against the virus. This can explain why other countries, especially Asian countries, have been much less hit by the coronavirus pandemic. And in the future, these countries will not experience the chaos of infighting over the pandemic like the US and other Western countries. These countries' vision is to get out of the pandemic while Washington is still infighting over this virus. Recently, some netizens said that China should not be compared with the US, whose work is dealing with the pandemic is among the worst across the world. This is a sign of awakening. Some people have realized that the US has done a poor job. Washington can no longer fool China or other countries, let alone blame China for the pandemic.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, salamun alaikum. You are listening to Lantern, and we have a new story. The title of the story is The Lion, the Ass, and the Fox are the three personalities in our today's story. A lion, an ass, and a fox were hunting in company and caught a large quantity of game. The ass was asked to divide the spoil. This he did very fairly, giving each an equal share. The fox was well satisfied, but the lion flew into a great rage over it. And with one stroke of his huge paw, he added the ass to the pile of slain. Then he turned to the fox. "You divide it," he roared angrily. The fox wasted no time to talking. He quickly piled all the game into one great heap. From this, he took a very small portion for himself, such undesirable bite as the horns and hoofs of a mountain goat and the end of an ox tail. The lion now recovered his good humor entirely. "Who taught you to divide so fairly?" he asked pleasantly. "I learned a lesson from the ass," replied the fox, carefully edging away. Learn from the misfortunes of others.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. This is Vita at your service. You're listening to IRIB English Radio, and this is Lantern. A new story, a new perspective, a new day, a new life. Thank you for listening to us. Let's go through the beautiful story of today, which I'm really interested in because in my own personal life, I have a special mindset that I'm really rebellious about experience. I mean, using the experience of other people. There are always people before us and maybe after us who will go through an experience which may be useful for our lives. The thing I want to tell you is that you shouldn't think that way that, okay, we have to experience everything by ourselves. Sometimes you have to stop this mindset, think, learn, and believe that maybe other people's experience may be helpful too. But, you know, it's not always that easy, in my opinion. But sometimes you have to consider the cost of not going through another people's experience. For example, in the story of the tiny smart fox of today, we saw that the cost of experiencing a new thing was really high that the fox decided to actually choose the experience of another animal. This is the same about our own life too. You know, when we are children, we learn and fail all the time. We fall off bikes, I don't know, we may get hurt and, I don't know, do something incorrectly, tell someone what we shouldn't tell them, and so on. But that's just what kids do. As adults, we tend to move into areas of core competency. You know, human being finds the right way to face future events and doesn't fall into error in similar cases in compared to the past experiences. So, it doesn't mean that you are weak if you are using other people's experience. Sometimes, because I don't know, it is about prejudice, pride, or whatever it is, we feel like we cannot use other people's experiences because we are weak. No, it's not a weakness. It's a power. It's a power to know that you don't have a lot of time in this world. Your time is limited, so you have to use it wisely. And this wisdom comes from using other people's experiences.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
And sometimes you have to understand that these experiences are not materialistic only, and they don't have materialistic benefits, but also they have spiritual benefits too. As I told you, this life is considered as a big test for us. You know, you have to pass this test, and you cannot cheat on that because everybody's question is different. There was a beautiful story once that, I don't know, every student wanted to cheat on the exam and they wrote the other people's answer. But they didn't pay attention to the point that the questions are different. This is exactly as we live in this world. Everybody has his own story. And for finding the best way of the ending of your story or the opening of the new chapter of your life, you have to know that you shouldn't experience anything by yourself. And actually, I need someone to tell myself this because I'm that sort of person who just think like, okay, I have to go through this experience because I need it. If you did it, it was for yourself. I cannot use yours. And this is completely wrong. I have to admit that I may be rebellious in these sort of things myself. But I, I think I had some dark experience because of this behavior too. So That was a really simple story, maybe somehow a bit of cliche, but this cliche is life. Let me tell you something really interesting about cliche. Unfortunately, we think cliches are something that, I don't know, we have to ignore or we have to, I don't know, be like, oh, it's cliche, it's not that much important. We don't need to listen to that. But cliches are some correct facts which we ignore because we know they are correct. And this is the nature of human being. We want to, I don't know, prove to ourselves, prove to the nature, prove to family, relatives, other people that we are strong. But sometimes the definition of this strength that we use is so wrong that will make us go through a dramatic change or a huge problem in our own life. So don't forget to read books and don't forget that this experience that is written here in that book by 1,000 years is so much more than what you can go through in your limited time in this life. Don't be rebellious. Sometimes you have to stop, reflect, and think and choose the best way. Thank you for listening to this episode. It was all the time we had for today. I bid you farewell.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up...